Okay, so today we're here with Susan Lehman. I'm Diane Quinn, and we are in Susan's home in Manhattan. It is Wednesday, November 16th, 2016, and we are here doing interview 3 of 3 for the Actors Fund. Thank you again for joining me.
Of course, thank you.
Good to see you. I would like you to talk a little bit. You mentioned having an agent, but can you tell me a little bit about how that came about? I know that's not your first agent, and sort of what the process of getting an agent was for you.
Agents are very tricky because you really are of a type, usually, for an agent. And sometimes it's, as I started out, of course, when I was 22, so I was young, and getting an agent was usually who you knew, and obviously you would go. In those days we made rounds, and we would go to agents and knock on doors and give out pictures and resumes in those early days, and then and sometimes it worked and you got an agent who was interested. And then every time you did something, you would call them and let them know that they would be that you were doing such and such on such and such a time, and if they would like to come, you'd love to have them come and see you. And we would make, as I said, we made rounds, which meant going to the various. Very often, sometimes it was an audition, but very often it was just going to an office. A production office or an agent's office, and introducing yourself or just sticking your head in and waving and say, I'm here, or whatever you did. It got different as I got older because I then had not only agents that I knew better, but sometimes when you had auditioned for someone before through an agent, they would speak back to the agent and say, so-and-so did very well, by the way, you should know that. Or don't ever send me so-and-so again, or something like that. That very rarely happened. When you were in anything, you obviously expected to be slowly but surely be known and know more about the agents that you're going. And I think it was also following up with who your friends were, who their agents were. There were big agents. There were little agents. They were agents who did children. As I got older, I found that there were agents who concentrated on seniors, and as I got to know more of the agents and got into the business, it's who you know. It's always who you know, and it's making those connections so that you are. In a constant sense and a flow, but it does take time, and in the beginning it isn't easy unless you start out with a big part. I mean, you can have, you know, a wonderful, if you start out on Broadway with a major part, then you're going to be seen, you're going to be known, and then it may not last. You know, that may not last. It's really a constant working part of the working process, which is to get to know directors, to get to know. I used to try to see everything I possibly could and introduce myself to the various people that were in charge, and that maybe was easier sometimes and not so easy other times. Some people think you've got to have an agent. I didn't. There were times when I did not have an agent, or I was working with an agent, but I wasn't signed with them, and that may have made a difference. I now am blessed as a senior person with a wonderful agent. He concentrates a lot on kids, but he also concentrates on seniors too. So that's one of the things. And you know, I've gotten to know him and his office, and we love each other. So whenever there's anything that comes up that I would be remotely right for, they submit me. And I had a lot of agents for commercials in those early days. That was how you really were introduced. There are definitely classes, for instance, at Actors Equity. There are classes for SAG at SAG and AFTRA, where you can go and be educated as to how to get to an agent, how to do this. I mean, we sort of invented it, or I did anyway. We invented it along the way, but every time you do something, you get that little note into them. They expect that. I used to think, well, I'm going to be bothering them. No, you're not. The most important thing is that you get your name in there whenever it's a legitimate situation. So I think, do you have any questions about that, about agenting that might?
No, I think you've covered. I mean, I just wanted to know how you got your agent and how you think the business in general is served by you working with an agent. And I think
I think the agents do serve a great service, because they make it possible for people to at least know something about you. Now, I'll find now, even now, that there are agents that will ask for me, which is quite lovely. You know, they would ask for someone with a belt voice, maybe, because I have a belt voice, or a legitimate voice, or has she done such and such a role. You know, and of course that's the agent can help them do that, you know, help them ferret out the people who hadn't. I do think that there is, that they do serve a great purpose, and I enjoyed working with at least three or four of them. It really is also who you know, in terms of who your friends' agents are, because very often they can put in a good word for you. Listen, I auditioned for something, and I'm not right for it, but you would be perfect for it. And then you call the agent. So it's really networking all the time. So
okay, thank you.
You bet.
Can you talk a little bit, you've had such a wonderful time talking about the people that you've worked with, and can you talk about some of the joys that you've had, some of the very positive things that have happened?
I'm automatically grinning from ear to ear, because there is nothing more fun than having people who are, who you love, who you can work with, who are very special. And I started out at the Kansas City Starlight. Now that was, I was in the ensemble, and I understudied. But we were working all the time with stars. They would bring in stars for the various big roles. And I worked with some brilliant people. I mean, God, and of course, now no names come up. But wonderful, wonderful people. Pause. We were talking about the joys of working with various people and how they helped to get an agent, to get a job, to get to know people. And of course, well, I started out with the Kansas City Starlight, and I was there for two seasons. And of course, the Kansas City Starlight was, in those days, they brought in all of the big leads. And I got to know quite a few of them very well. But Carol Burnett, of course, was one of my very, very, very favorite people. She just was so kind to everyone. And she was so terrific working in the shows and such. And, of course, then she went on to have her own show, as you know. She was just very helpful to me. I didn't miss a night in the wings. I was there all the time, and she knew that. She would stay at the end of the show and sign autographs, and it didn't matter how long it took. She would talk to everybody that came up to her. Another person that made such an impression on me and that became a good friend was Catherine Damon. Her name is Skipper Damon. That was her nickname. And Skipper was just, oh my goodness, Skipper was so elegant. She was and I'm from Indiana, so I'm, you know, I mean, what you sees is what you gets, kind of. And I was a character woman. Of course, Skipper was a leading lady. She just helped me when I came to New York. She helped me get my first credit card. if she heard of something, she would call and she would say, listen, I think you're right for this. You should have your agent call so-and-so. Or, listen, there's an agent that I think you would really do well with. Why don't you go in and see so-and-so? And that was part of the joy of working with people from the Kansas City Starlight. And then because you got to hear and see and know people that were at a place where they could help you, but they were also at a place where they could advise you. And of course, I just never knew a stranger. I was always very I just made sure I knew everybody, just because that's just how I am. And I think that's probably not a bad thing for theater to do. If you want to keep on, it's all about who you know. And it doesn't necessarily matter when you know them, because you can remember them at 2 or 3 or 10 years later, whatever. Anyway, I think that those were the couple of people Keith Harrington was he was in Around the World in 80 Days, and we were friends, very close friends. In fact, we'd have dinner together, and sometimes he lived in the village, and so did I. So when we came back, I had dinner with him so often. And just a lovely group of people that became my friends. And that's the neat thing. That's one of the great joys of being in theater. It's who you're with and who you're working with, because you're family. You are a part of a family, and once you are no longer in a play with them or a musical, you think you never lose that connection, that camaraderie, which kind of takes me to one thought that we were maybe going to talk about, which is touring. And I toured with Fiddler on the Roof, when you're on tour with people, I mean, you're eating and, you know, maybe sleeping with them, but eating and working with them every day. You travel with them. I was like in the fourth year of the First National Company of Fiddler on the Roof. And I ended up being the understudy for Zeitel, and I ended up getting the part of Zeitel when one of the girls left. And so I had a very nice, lovely year as Zeitel, and I think I told you, I'd mentioned before that I got married 410 times, because it was...
Did you travel domestically with that?
Oh, yes. We traveled...
Only, or did you also travel to Europe?
To Europe?
Yeah.
No, I never did. It was all, yes. And it was all mostly east coast, east of the Mississippi, and up and down the coast. So we played Florida. In fact, we were in Florida for about 7 weeks. We were in Boston for a period of a good, you know, like eight weeks, I think. Sometimes it would always be at least 2 weeks, which would be wonderful, because then you didn't have to travel on your day off. You had a chance to sit and just enjoy the town where you were. And I thought it was really great to get to see so many different places. And of course, there were in Fiddler, there were the two little sisters. And I always tried to make sure that we all saw what was in that town, what was there to be seen in that town with them. And I had a wonderful time touring. But that's also part of it. You begin and you have friends that you have them forever. And especially if you do a show with them, they're forever. And if you're in the First National Company or a company or an organization of theater, you get to know a lot of people too by being in a company for a season, let's say, like we were I was talking about with the Starlight. But also, wherever you met people in the theater, there was a bond, which was very special and very joyous.
You also talked about in our first interview an adventure that you had, and you said you were going to speak a little bit more about it. Would you like to speak a little bit more?
Yeah,
are
you talking about the shipwreck?
No. Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, yes, of course, it was very dramatic. That was quite an adventure. I did a lot of reviews. I did P-Town, Provincetown. I did Boston. I did Wilmington. I did. But the one that was the most interesting was Pause. The one that was the most interesting was a trip to St. Thomas in the Virgin Islands. And I lived at that point on the man who was producing the review that we were doing owned a yacht. So instead of staying in a hotel or something like that, I got to stay on the yacht. A big one. And in the marina, I became friends with some people who were some folks from Canada who had a trimaran, and they were touring around the various areas in the Bahamas on that. And of course, I'd never been in. I was in Indiana again. I'd never seen the ocean till I was in my 20s. So I got to be on this the trimaran, and at a certain point, obviously our show closed, and so I lived on the trimaran with this Canadian family, and it was two brothers and a father, and Howard reminded me he was so elegant. God, he was elegant. He was British, of course, but he was Canadian. And the two boys, the two sons, were just very lovely to me. And I had a Scotty dog, too, at that point. I had my Scotty dog came with me. They said when I was going about with them, they were taking people on tours of the area, and so these people came from, the people that we toured with came from Pennsylvania, a mom, mother, husband, and two sons. And of course I was on the board ship with the father and two sons and me, so I was sort of there for the mommy. And we set sail from St. Thomas and went to the Virgin Gorda and various areas down there on tour, on the Hypatia, and they would rent it. So I was chief cook and bottle washer. And when I got, they said, they, meaning the Marlers, said that when I, they, that's the name of the family, that the Canadian family that I was touring with, chartering, that's what it's called. That when I was done, instead of paying me, they would take me back to New York on the ship. So I thought, well, that's fine. I don't have to figure out how I'm going to get back there. And I had time. I was not booked for something till like August or something, or July. And this was like in June, I think. So I had time. So we set out, sail from St. Thomas, and at a certain point, and unfortunately, the father had a heart attack, and so it was just the two boys, the two brothers who from Canada, and myself and my Scotty dog. And we started off, it was just wonderful we were going toward from St. Thomas to Miami was the place, and. As we were going, we had beautiful weather. And then as we got toward the outskirts of Miami, not outskirts of Miami, but east of Miami, and we were going to go into to Miami, and we were going to go to a particular marina. But when we were there, when we were on the ocean, there was something that happened with the starter button, and of course it had an indoor motor, but it was also sail, so trimaran was sail, and we were mostly sailing, but we ran into a terrible storm was coming, and we didn't need, we basically could not, the wind was so high, the waves were so high. And one thing about a trimaran, because it's flat, is it will never sink, but it could tip over. So at this, at a certain point, and Brian was the sailor, and we got to the point where we really needed. He felt we really needed to get into the life raft, which was a big, huge life raft. So as he was pulling the the cord to unleash their life raft, one of those huge waves hit us, and it knocked him and the life raft overboard. And but he was a fine swimmer. So that left the other brother and myself and my Scotty on board ship. And we went, concerned, obviously, about this, the other brother, because he was now feeling his oats, said, well, I'm in charge. He said, and what we've done is we've anchored the trimaran into the waves, which was one of the things that Brian did before he was knocked overboard. But he could have swum, I mean, the whole time, because he was an extremely accomplished sailor. But he was knocked overboard. So at one point, when he said, he was very careful about don't undo the anchor rope, because then you'll go broadside to the waves. So Brian came in, and the other brother came in and said, he said, I'm now in charge. I'm now in charge, and I'm going to cut the anchor rope. And he said, what do you want to do? He looked at me, he said, you can either jump, or you can stay with us, because I'm going to cut the anchor rope. We'll get in faster if we do that. And I said, I can't do that. I said, I know if you cut the anchor rope, the boat will become loosened and go broadside to the waves and tip over. And I'd rather jump. So they gave me a life ring, a decorative life ring that I put under my arms, and my Scotty dog over my shoulder, and I jumped into these extraordinary waves. And I knew from before I jumped that Brian had made it to shore, because Howard worked for BOAC, so there was a BOAC, there was flashlights and all that sort of thing, flashlights in that the life raft. And I saw from way in the distance this flashlight going back and forth. So I knew that in which direction I needed to go, and I knew that Brian would be there. So I said I'm jumping. So I did. I jumped, and that was that. And I was immediately engulfed in these huge waves. Of course, they were 20-foot waves. I mean, they were huge. And my Scotty was over my shoulder. I had this life ring, that was it. And I'm even shaking right now. And I just knew that I would be all right. You know how that is when it's life. You just, life or death. And I just knew that I had to do that. So I jumped in. And then I'd be hit by these waves, and we'd be rolled, my Scotty, Bonnie Jean and I. But slowly but surely, I knew that we were coming into the lee of two rocks. So the waves weren't quite so bad. And so now I started to yell, and I got a big voice. So I yelled, and I could see the flashlight. And this happened at night, by the way. So it was just about the end of just before the dawn. And I saw Brian on the shore with the big life ring, life raft. And he came out into the water, and I was in such a state of shock, I couldn't walk. So he picked me up, and Bonnie was my dog, and she went right up on the sand, and so then we knew where we were, but we knew that everything that had to do with Long Island in the Bahamas, again, not Long Island, New York, Long Island in the Bahamas, was on the ocean side, because it was could be so prone to storms that we had to get to the other side. So I had was my bathing suit and a jacket, And he gave me his shoes, which were great big shoes, but at least I got Brian gave me that, and then we just started walking, and it was a British island, and on a British island, if you were shipwrecked, you had to go to the magistrate, and of course, we went and we finally found the magistrate's office, and we went in. The irony of all of this was that we needed to fix that outdoor that motor, the starter motor. We needed something called a 5/8-inch spanner, which is like this that you know there are different sizes of them, and 5/8-inch spanner. So when we got to the magistrate's office on Long Island, we walked into an outer office, which was just, it was painted in that awful green enamel. Everything was green enamel. And on the table, there wasn't anything else in the place, was a 5/8-inch spanner on the table. It was, I said, do you see that? What is that? Brian, what is that? He said, it's a 5/8-inch spanner. So anyway, we had to be interviewed by ourselves, because we knew that Michael had died. Michael was the other brother, had died. He was obviously had drowned, and got cleared that we were okay. Called Howard, who was in Miami, because he'd gone there but he was fine. So he sent and he came in a double engine airplane, little plane, where I sat on one side with Bonnie, and Brian sat on the other, and Michael was between us, we flew then to Miami, and from there Howard was able to call my folks, and my folks were in New York within the day, and I was then flown back from Miami to. That was just one of the adventures that happened in being in show business. So. Any questions?
I actually do. Michael was the man who was the...
Michael was the two brothers.
Right.
It was Brian and Michael.
And Brian fell off first.
Brian was knocked overboard when he unleashed the life raft. And it was because Howard worked for BOAC. It was a huge 20-person life raft. So when that huge wave hit us, he was knocked over, but he was okay because he could swim. Michael could not. But Michael got really, he just said, I'm cutting the, we've got to get in faster. We've got to get in faster. And I said, I was against it. But so he said, well, then you can jump or you can stay with it. So
you had a second life raft that you were, that's what?
No, we didn't. We had just, Brian was already on the shore of Long Island, way in the distance. I didn't make that very clear.
No, that's okay. So Michael stayed with the boat.
Michael stayed with the boat.
Gotcha.
And it obviously tipped over because he drowned. Mm-hmm. In fact, Bonnie, my Scotty, found him. And he drowned. And this was of course after I got back onto land. I'm sorry, it's a little bit confusing, but that's the story. This is written up, by the way, in a wonderful book called A Book of Angels by Sophie Burnham. Sophie Burnham is a wonderful playwright as well as a metaphysician. And she wrote about A Book of Angels, and it's a story about, it's sort of a history of angels. And she asked me if she could tell that story, and I said, of course she could. So that's how, but if you want to pick it up, if you want to read about it, it's in A Book of Angels by Sophie Burnham.
Okay. Is there anything else that you would like to talk about that we haven't touched on in the three interviews we've had?
I don't know. I know that I've had wonderful experiences. The moment of joy was, for instance, I just did a play called I Remember Mama, which was, a senior version. All the parts were played by senior women.
and it was done by the Transport Group, which is in 2014, which is a group in New York, an off-Broadway theater group in New York. And we had a wonderful, extraordinary, bumpy road in terms of getting the show done, but it was so well conceived by the director, by our director, and when it opened, the night it opened, we got such, I don't think any of us expected the response, but they just did not stop applauding, and it was just fabulous, and I had a wonderful time. That was one of the moments of joy I wrote down, because coming out after, they wouldn't let us leave. They would not let us leave, and was very, very fine. I don't know. I think that's pretty much it. I think the greatest thing I got to do was assist Mike Nichols in a Broadway show called Prisoner of Second Avenue, where I understudied. I stage managed, I put replacements in, and that began my interest in directing, and that was very, very successful as well. So I had, but I did so many different things in that play, and that was the neat thing. I think the thing that's interesting about my work over the years is that I've had so many different kinds of work that I've done, and I mean everything from directing to ushering to of course acting, singing, dancing, all of the stage managing, cueing people, all the different things that I've done to make a living, A, and B, to continue my work in the theater.
Well, thank you. I think this is a great place to end. Thank you. It's been a joy.
Welcome. It's been delightful, Diane, as well, to you. Thank you.
Thank you.